Good afternoon, KINS. It is. No, pardon me. Let me quote Aaron properly. This is KINS. That was just cool. I don't know why it's striking me as fun. Today's Friday, February the 3rd. And it is fun, by the way. I just, you know, yeah, okay. We got some compliance on that one. 34th day of the new year. Is my mic on?
No.
No, it's not on. Okay. Oh, joining us this afternoon is Humboldt Bay.
Can we say Humboldt Bay? I'm impressed. You remember.
Humboldt Bay Fire District Chief, Ken Wood. Is it official? No, it's not official. You still have the double patch. It's,
well, not. The name is official, but the actual governance part is not official yet.
So I am wondering, instead of the red trucks and the yellow trucks, are we going to have spotted red trucks or spotted yellow trucks?
We're probably going to have red trucks eventually with black tops and a yellow stripe. We have to mix it up.
Ooh,
we have to combine and
stripe.
Mix it up.
Yeah. Ooh. And the color of the ladder?
They're going to be silver. Aluminum.
Oh, okay.
Except for an aerial, it's going to be white. So, yeah.
Okay.
That's the preliminary ideas, but that's will probably be the toughest thing to solve in the consolidation is deciding on colors.
Make them all blue.
Yeah. There are those out there.
This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about, well, the deployment, the merging of the two organizations, how that's progressing. Just a real quick one because, you know, it's kind of happening on its own and everybody's happy in the construction. But there was a situation earlier this week. Well, I mean, if you don't say everybody's happy, you know, I say
it's it's an ongoing process that's going to take some time.
Okay. Still breaking out the iron and taking care of the wrinkles, huh?
Yeah. Okay. It will be.
Or whopping on the side of the head, one or the other.
Okay. Hopefully not too much of that, but we'll see.
There was a fire earlier this week that will be the preponderance of the program that involved the possibility of a pipe bomb. And Ken was there and has special insight on that situation. But we'll talk about how a non-normal situation, some of the challenges that are associated with it, and some of the frustrations that are also. You know, we don't get too many opportunities, thankfully, to have this kind of a situation, but it's it begs to be interesting. How's that?
It was.
All right. We'll see if I can get my microphone working after the break, and we'll be back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 417. It was that long, lengthy, entertaining introduction that took that extra 2 minutes. We're back to talk shop. Okay, it was long. With Ken Wood. Our quote of the day this afternoon comes from Silent Cal. Okay, I could go with that, but no, I probably
works for me.
He wasn't one of your faves, huh? All right. Oh, let her rip here. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than the unsuccessful man with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated failures. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent.
I'm buying into that. Yeah.
You know, for a college or university president to say that.
That's big stuff.
Kind of gets it. But then maybe that's what led to him being known as Silent Cal, too. So how is the blending of the reds and the yellows coming?
It's going well. Operationally, we are...
They didn't indicate that in the first segment.
Extremely
going
busy.
Well,
it's going well on the operational side. We are doing an awful lot of things to cross-train on apparatus, whether it be our water tender in the district, whether it's the truck in the city, sharing our resources that way, just streamlining some of our... policies, procedures, so they line up from both agencies into one, really taking the best of each organization and combining it in just a number of different levels.
Is there that much difference?
There is, although we've been working together for a number of years, dropping boundaries, there's a lot of ins and outs, and particularly when it comes to fire apparatus, hose loads, one department used one, another one used the other, and they had different ways of putting them back, and this is a big deal to firefighters. So now when the engine shows up, it doesn't matter whose it is, you're going to see the same type of hose load. Everybody is versed in doing the same thing, and we're just doing a lot more things that way operationally to get us all on the same page. So no matter where you go, no matter what station, everything's very, very similar.
But there was enough deviance between the two.
There was, yeah.
Was it uncomfortable or unsafe?
Not unsafe, just a different way of doing things. You may have a two different ways of making pizza, two different recipes for coming out with the same thing, and that's kind of what we had. But now it's all one, and it just makes us more efficient, that we can take better advantage of not only our career personnel but our volunteers. It doesn't matter which department they came up in. Now they can work at any of our fire stations, and they're going to get the same type of equipment, same type of exposure. They know that the training's the same, that the equipment's the same, and it's just beneficial.
When does us versus them fade into history? Is it getting there?
If I knew the answer to that, I'd be one of those geniuses that you talked about,
yeah,
in the
great
quote.
Yeah.
But we're making, I think, very good progress on that right now. There's a level of optimism in both organizations that I'm very pleased to see within a very short period of time. We've only been at this really since September when I took over for both. I think we're seeing some huge progress on two different cultures. And in a couple of weeks, our consultant is going to be meeting with us to start talking about the financial side and the form of governance that's going to be the best as we go forward to form a stable foundation for fire protection in the future.
That's code for revenue generation, right?
It is revenue generation and how that plays out. Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's property tax side, whether it's sales tax, whether it's, you know, benefit assessments, those types of things. But we need something that's going to be stable.
How long do you think before you really do have a single entity? Not the fundraising side. I mean, okay.
But yeah.
Do you have to have full staff turnover before it really will be cemented?
I don't think so. I think within a couple years, we can really cement this together and make it so it's one organization.
Are you going to start taking your guys and moving around and interspersing?
We are. Our first step is to move crews into each other's stations, orientation, so that they're responding on a regular basis.
Into new stations.
Into new and existing.
Gee, I wonder why there's some resistance.
Yeah, there will be that of moving entire crews to start with, so that, you know, a formerly Eureka engine is in a district station, they're responding out to the edge of the district, and they're familiar then with those areas. And then eventually we'll be moving people. And if we need a captain in one location, we can just move them to that firehouse and vice versa.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 4:23. We'll be back with more from Ken Wood.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money, you won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 4:27. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods from Humboldt Bay Fire District. Smooth, huh?
You like Very good.
Yeah.
Just rolls right off there.
There you go. Like a duck in water. Wait. It's water off the duck.
Yeah, that's the other one.
Hey, you know, I never got that stuff squared up anyway. Seemed like a relatively active week for the troops.
Busy week.
The car crash responses.
Mm-hmm.
Are they more common than people think or less common?
We get a lot of vehicle accidents. The one the other day involved an actual extrication where, you know, a normal vehicle accident where we have injuries, we normally send one engine, and it's a medical call where you're assisting the victims in the car. This one the other day, the car was on its side. Individuals trapped in the car. We have to do much more extensive work on those, requires more manpower, more apparatus. We have to stabilize the vehicle to start with, put somebody in the car for patient care. Then we need to extricate them from the vehicle, and that's using the jaws of life and the power equipment to cut the car up so we can gain access to them to get them out.
Jaws of life, is that through the door opening up, or do you, like in this one, if it's sideways, do you go through the roof?
What we'll do is just cut the roof off the car.
Yeah, turn it into a convertible.
Exactly.
So to speak.
Yeah, yeah. We have big pair of
scissors. Isn't it?
No, it's hydraulic tools. It's the jaws of life is a spreader type tool, and then in conjunction with that is a cutter, which is essentially like a pair of scissors that we can cut through steel posts and metal, and we'll just cut the roof right off the car. And lay the roof down, and we've got access immediately then to the patients.
I would expect that there would be some, not hesitation, but some advanced preparation to be able to do that, because you don't want all of a sudden people plopping out on the street,
right?
Either.
There is, and that's why we'll put a firefighter in the car immediately, and we hold what's called C-spine cervical stabilization. We make sure that if they're hanging upside down from a seatbelt, that we are very conscious of neck, back injuries. We want to support them, get cervical collar on them before we start any of that cutting and tearing and prying type thing.
Kind of like a shim shingle?
Yeah.
Wedge them all?
Very similar. Yeah, okay. We'll stabilize them so that when we are cutting, the car is moving, that type of thing, they're not moving. And that's the way we want them to go to the hospital, basically with very little movement, so that we're not doing any more damage than the vehicle did.
So if you have a driver still behind the wheel, do you cut the steering wheel off too? So you don't have that extra...
Yeah, it may be moving the steering wheel out of the way. It may be moving the dashboard, pushing it away from the victim. It could be as simple as just moving the seat back and gaining access to the patient that way. So there's a number of different things we utilize, different techniques we utilize to gain access and then extricate the victims.
In that kind of a situation where the car is not on its four mm-hmm. wheels,
right?
Do you disconnect the battery and things like that so that there's not the chance of a spark?
We do, and a lot of times, depending on the vehicles, now with newer vehicles, you have airbags that even when you disconnect the battery, there's sometime a delay. Those airbags can still go off. We pry and look in places, so we'll pry off some of the plastic molding, identify where the airbags are, so we're not just cutting through those items on there. And it really changes with the new vehicles on the market today.
And you probably pay attention to where the gas tank is as well.
Yeah,
and
we
the
do.
General condition.
We do try to keep track of where that is, too.
Well, you guys are good. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 4:31. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Now, a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lampus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time is 4:35. We're back to talk shop with Ken Woods, Humboldt Bay Fire District Chief. Ken, you had another unique situation earlier in the week. Actually, I guess you had a couple of them.
Yeah, one particular.
Let's talk about the one up on a remodeling project. New construction always presents challenges.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you guys get called on the scene for one of those?
Actually, it's fairly common. We do. Accidents happen no matter where you are, and we'll be on those type of calls. You know, they are fairly regular, and particularly the medical calls are the bulk of our business. So we see a fair number of those.
Getting up on top of the structures, though, has got to be a little challenging, particularly, you know, the one you were alluding to during the break at Bayshore Mall. It's a large structure.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not going to be able to pull up right next to it because it's so wide and just the scope of it all. How does that present a unique challenge?
Well, depending on you're absolutely right, depending on the structure itself. In this case, we ended up going around to the back of the mall where the construction work was taking place and where we had an injured worker on the roof. The initial engine that got there climbed inside where the construction work was taking place up a temporary construction ladder to the roof. Then we had the problem of we had the victim on the roof. How are we going to get him down? We did respond our aerial apparatus, and we ended up packaging the patient into a Stokes basket, stabilizing them, and then raising our aerial ladder, putting them on the ladder, and then removing them that way. But with limited reach of our apparatus, in this case we were using a backup aerial of 85 feet instead of our 100-footer. And if we had been around the front, cars in parking spaces, it makes it much more difficult, and we have to really pick and choose where we're going to go.
Could you call the Coasties and have them bring one of their copters over?
We could. We have done that, not, you know, as much with building construction, but when you get out up in the hills and those types of things, over the bank type rescues, yeah, we do call them and use them, and it's a great asset having the helicopter available to do
I would imagine that's that's one you just say thanks on a regular basis.
Yeah, when they're over the bank a couple hundred feet and you're looking up, trying to figure out how you're going to get them up there. And you can do it, but having that resource available where you can hook them up and take them right out and they're transported to the hospital is just a great asset.
If in this scenario you had to get them to the hospital quicker,
mm-hmm.
would you have done that rather than using the fire truck, playing the game, dropping it down, having then to load them into the ambulance? And then the ambulance having to fight traffic across town?
In this case, no. We were there very quickly and called for the aerial quickly so that by the time the aerial arrived, the other engine crew already had the patient ready to go in a Stokes basket. As soon as the aerial pulled up, within just a couple of minutes, we were removing them from the roof and putting them into the ambulance. So it was a pretty quick process.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you having the fire station nearby.
That helps.
Yeah, quick response.
Absolutely, that helps. Yeah.
Was traffic a problem?
Traffic wasn't a problem. The problem for us is we were using our reserve piece of aerial apparatus, which is a 1977, and it is extremely slow in its response due to a gas engine and gears and all those things. So it with a newer apparatus, with our regular truck, we're faster, but we're looking at purchasing a new one this year to replace that 77, giving us much more efficiency and abilities than when we have to put that replacement in service.
Well, thank God you don't have to use this one as an example of why you need to have the new one, right?
Well, the existing one we've had go down actually 3 times in the past 2 weeks here. And running the reserve really changes our tactics and how we're going to go about things.
So you were dodging the devil there.
We were. We had to use it on our structure fire this week as well. And it changes how we do business. Having a new apparatus that's capable, 100-foot ladder with a pump that can respond quickly is a huge asset. to mitigating emergencies early.
KINS, News and Information Times, 440. We'll talk about that fire when we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon. KINS News and Information Time is 4:43. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, you had the opportunity to deal with a unique situation earlier this week. Not that running around on the top of the ball is not that unique for you guys. but this one involved a couple of different levels of response. A fire earlier in the week. Why don't you kind of give everybody a quick profile of it?
We responded to a reported structure fire at an apartment complex on West Church.
Where is that, by the way?
Pine in West Church.
Okay.
So when we arrived, we had two burn victims in the street in an apartment on fire. Heavy smoke, flames coming from a second-story apartment complex with an attached residence. We went in, did what we normally do, go inside, attack the fire, put the fire out, treated the patients, transferred them to the ambulance, and they were transported to St. Joe's. In the course of, after we had extinguished most of the fire, we do what's called overhaul work, where we're checking for hot spots, fire in hidden spaces. We want to make sure the fire is completely out.
Is that where you take the fancy camera?
Yes, the thermal imaging camera. Exactly. We're looking for heat. And in that process, we opened a closet and we found what appeared to be a pipe bomb. Looked like every picture of pipe bombs we've seen in our training.
What happens at that moment?
After
the breathing resumes,
right.
What happens next?
We evacuate all the firefighters. Of course, we already had all the residents out of the apartment because of the fire, but now comes the time that we have to pull all our firefighters out. So we did that immediately, and we notified law enforcement. They requested the bomb squad. But at this point now, we're outside, and we have an exclusion zone about 70 feet where we're staying away, but we still have hot spots in this building. Bomb squad arrives, and they're in the process of getting a search warrant. The search warrant takes about 3.5 hours.
Now, why does it take? You got a live fire.
We do.
And a bomb, possible.
Right.
And it takes. You may as well come by for the marshmallow roast because that's going to be all that's left of the building if it takes too much longer, right?
And
it's going to burn down.
That's just about what took place in this situation. And, you know, I'm not in law enforcement, and I know they have to go through the process of writing the search warrant, getting it to a judge.
So this becomes a cop thing, not a fire thing.
It does. And okay. So, you know, the police want to make sure that any evidence they gather inside is admissible in court, is legally done. So they have to wait for a search warrant. In the meantime, we're outside, and because of some wind, we see this fire start to kick back up. Normally, we go in and we put the fire out. In this case, we can't go in, so we're shooting water from a distance through windows and openings, but we can't get to the seat of the fire. So soon we have an attic fire, which is traveling through the length of this building.
So you're playing target practice.
Exactly.
Through the windows and just lobbing it up on the roof, hoping
we can get enough water in there in the right places to knock this thing down enough until this search warrant arrives. We can have the bomb squad go in, find the device, and tell if it's safe or not.
Now, there's not that many situations, so there's probably never going to be protocol or procedure on this. But I would think you got a fire. Let's say it's a meth lab. You break into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got chemicals all over the joint.
Right.
And there's a fire in the back room, and it's starting to move through the attic.
Right.
Search warrants? You just go in and hose everything down and deal with the leftover, the aftermath, the environmental quality? Do you just pull out and say, blow up, baby, and, you know, we'll worry about it?
Yeah.
I would think when there's that blending of the two that it's
challenging.
It is, and we're going to risk a lot to save a lot, but I'm not going to put my firefighters with the potential of a possible bomb exploding in order to save some property there. So, you know, because of the potential, we're going to stay outside, and then it's law enforcement's responsibility and the bomb squad to deal with whatever device that may be. So, you know, they were at the mercy of the search warrant. We were at the mercy of them.
And Merle's going to be at the mercy of me on Monday.
Well, this was the Humboldt County Sheriff's bomb squad.
That's okay. The process is the same to better understand.
Right. EPD was there, and they, you know, were gathering information.
So back comes the search warrant that says, okay, you guys can figure this thing out now or deal with it.
So we had, you know, we're spraying our water from the exterior, trying to keep this fire from extending into the residence on the end, which we were able to do, fortunately. Search warrant arrives. Now we've got a building that's in much different condition than immediately after the initial fire. We've got ceiling that's fallen down. We've got insulation. We've got a lot of more extensively burned structural members. And it comes time to how are you going to find this needle in this haystack now for the bomb squad?
Well, you know where it is.
Yeah. So I went in with a bomb squad technician, and, you know, we went to the closet, and I pointed out where it was, and they dug through, identified, saw the device, and determined very quickly that it was not a hazard, that it was something used in drug making. And at that point, once it was safe to go in, then firefighters could come back in. We put the rest of the fire out. And
so why did you go in? Why a fire dude instead of just the bomb guys?
Well, part of the problem, again, was because of the amount of damage it would have taken them. They may not have been able to even locate what we had identified initially because of the structural condition of the building. I went in with them I knew where it was, to point out exactly where it was. I'm not going to send my firefighters in there to do that. I just felt it was better for myself to go in there and do that quickly, and that's what happened.
Quicker than trying to follow a map?
Yes.
And maybe a minute or two could be the difference.
Right, and a map that wouldn't have made sense with the fire results at that point.
Congratulations. Thanks for coming by, dude.
Thank you.
We've been Talking Shop with Ken Woods. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love, and I'll see you tomorrow morning.